pase. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, January 21st, 2019. Jeez, the month of January is almost over, Dwayne, already.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing in the sense that I put my annual tweet out. I always, once a year, I always end up putting this out there. The winter schedule now, we can't, neither one of us can talk, tweet where I screen captured the Weather Network's profile.
It's minus 20. There's 2 feet of snow. There's no way we could play anything outside right now. Never mind summer sports. I don't even think we can do winter sports outside right now.
I would not want to be skiing today, and I love to ski. This would not be a nice day on the hill. It's minus 33 with wind chill in Toronto today. I don't know what it is in Montreal, but it can't be much nicer than here. And if it is
minus 25 or something, but yeah, it's cold. It's we're in the winter wonderland, people.
Yeah, well, actually, I in the office today, there's a coworker from Quebec City, and he was talking about how it felt like home for him. It's like he's about 55, so he's like, this is back like the 80s. I was out playing with my dog today, and the dog wandered in before me, and I'm like, oh my God, good for you. Don't they have a winter festival there? What's that thing?
Carnival. The Carnival de Quebec with Bonhomme.
There you go. Well, no, that's what I was trying to get out of there, yeah.
With the ugly mascot.
That's terrified children.
Yeah, him and Greedy together could make a tag team.
Anyways, yeah, that would be terrifying.
It's Monday, and training camps are opening across Major League Soccer, across North America as well, in the lower leagues in America and Canada. Canadian Premier League will start in a few weeks. So for the training camps opening today, Dwayne, what are you thinking? Is there anything in Toronto right now that's really surprising people or anything special in your mind for this opening of training camp?
We've entered the solo album era of TFC's band, if you know what I mean. Like, this is, they're still together, but they're doing solo projects, and there's this kind of belief that any one day it could all just blow up in their face. That's kind of where we're at right now.
So it's like Paul McCartney going with Wings, not necessarily like quitting the Beatles altogether, still singing their songs once in a while, but part of Wings.
Yeah, and you know what? They could still put a top-selling album out, but they also could just go into complete tailspin. That's kind of the feeling I get here in Toronto.
And so the solo album, is it going to be a Canadian album, or for Josie, is it going to be a Mexican album?
I've even heard a Miami album that he might take his talent to South Beach and play for David Beckham's team off the launch, because he'd be, you know, look, I think that, and I read the Reddit account today, and look, American fans, national team fans are, you know, completely, they're not particularly rational when they evaluate what happened at the end of the last campaign. There were problems in the system, but to blame them all, and I've said this many times before, but to blame them entirely on players or to claim that they weren't trying that day is patently ridiculous. But nonetheless, you know, if you're just going to dismiss the impact that Jose Altidore can have in Major League Soccer, even at this period in time, then you're not really critically evaluating, you're emotionally evaluating, and that's kind of silly. And look, I think there's still a chance that Jose Altidore stays in Toronto, but it all depends on his health. If he has even a hint of injury problems this year, then I don't know if you're TFC whether you can afford to move forward with him. This is the mistake that Bezbachenko, I think, would have made, and TFC would have made, is that they had all three of these contracts expiring at the same time. I suppose on one level you could look at that and go, well, this gives them an up and out, like they can completely retool. But also, you would almost have them staggered if it was just one of them at the end of the year. You wouldn't have so much like pressure on the season to be successful, so much sort of attention being taken away. So we'll see. But not Vazquez's problem anymore, is it?
Yeah. No, his problem is making sure Rubino stays focused on soccer. Which we know this is going to be difficult. Rubino, new player for the Columbus Crew. That's going to be interesting. And he scored a nice goal in Turkey this weekend. We'll talk about this maybe later on when we take a look at other training camps opening. But just to finish on Toronto, you were mentioning the contracts finishing at the same time. If I would have been Bezbachenko back in, 4 years ago, You go with the age of the player. Jovinko was the youngest of the Bloody Big Deal version 2, so the remix of the Bloody Big Deal, this time with Altidore and Sebastian Jovinko. I would make sure that Jovinko's contract goes like 1 year further than Bradley, and Bradley goes 1 year further than Altidore. So over 3 years, you lose one, you can replace, you lose one, you can replace, you lose one, you can replace, but you don't necessarily lose the core chemistry of the entire team because one player is out and you put in a few more and you have a season to develop that, and then you do the same process for 2 years. So you move away from your Bloody Big Deal remix and you still have a team that continues to grow. Now, if all three leaves at the end of this season, example, or if for Montreal, if Urruti, well, even though he signed a new contract with Montreal for 3 years and an option year, example, if Piatti and Urruti and another player leaves at the same time, Montreal's going to be in the same position that Toronto could be at the end of this season, is filling three big holes in your lineup.
Yeah, and that's not ideal. And look, it's hard to argue with what TFC did. I mean, if you go back to 2015, you go back to 2014, even with the Defoe, which is, of course, the 1.0 Bloody Big Deal, the actual, you know, the bloody part of the Bloody Big Deal. You can't argue with what they did. They turned what was a laughingstock into arguably one of the most dominant periods by an MLS team in the history of the league so far. And, you know, we're at the end of it right now. Whether they can squeeze one more out or not is a question. But from a Ali Curtis perspective, maybe it makes sense to have these contracts all come off. Maybe you convince Michael Bradley to come back on a TAM kind of deal to end his career here. He's the most likely because, look, the Bradleys, they're pretty invested in the project in Toronto. I mean, his uncle is the head of communications here too. Like, they have a lot of roots now. They've tied down. They stay here year round, which, you know,
yeah.
It's minus 33 today, so that's a choice that they're choosing.
I was going to say, so that they stay in town in the winter for Montreal and Toronto, you always know that that's a sign of commitment from the player. And remember, right? It's going to be a flashback, but back in the Expos days, there's players that were staying in Montreal year-round, going to play in the Dominican Republic in the winter, but going back to Montreal, and are to this day living in the city. So you never know what can happen after your playing career. Sometimes you found a home, and you stay at that home because you're comfortable. Maybe Toronto is that home for the Bradleys.
Yeah, and look, his I can still remember distinctly the 2014 press conference when he was announced. His little boy, who was maybe three at the time, he wasn't two, three, about that, I don't know for sure. There was this large cutout of Michael Bradley sitting there, and the kid kept going, dad, 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 pointing at the cutout, which was adorable. But it was also, you know, a sign of how long ago that is, because that kid's like walking and talking and going to school now. But that, yeah. More to the point, his little boy, he's almost Canadian, right? He doesn't know any different. This is his home.
Should we cap him right away?
I might want to think about it. Well, his daughter was born here, so she's
good.
Don't have to worry about that. She's Canadian citizen by default. it's the point being is that I can see them staying in a leadership position moving forward. Josie still has another contract left in him. Jovinko, you know, he's already making noise. He's got another contract. I think with Jovinko too, he thinks that Italy might still be an option for him, that he might still have a chance for the Euros. I think that's probably a misperception of him, but nonetheless, he might want to get back to the lower level of Serie A now to get another shot. But we said off the top, if we were planning this show, that we weren't going to over-talk about TFC again, because we talked a lot about them last week, and 10 minutes in. Here we go.
Well, let's move away from TFC now. The training camps are opening. Anthony Jackson-Amel was seen in the Quebec hospital this weekend, so he's not in Florida today. Or they're moving to Florida today. We'll see. Daniel Lovitz from Montreal is with the U.S. men's national team right now. And when he makes it back to training camp in February, there's a very high probability he's going to get a new contract and a pay raise, maybe all the way up to $300,000 for the first choice left back of the Montreal Impact. But just to go back on AGH for a second, still no resolution to the Anthony Jackson conundrum. He's under contract for another year. Him and Jamie Gall, we all know that there were some difficulties last year. It's not about the personalities. It's not necessarily about his lack of goals. It's more of his lack of effort in training, which translated in his lack of playing time for Anthony Jackson. The bridge is pretty much exploded already, so what's going to happen with ADH? We still don't know. There's maybe a few suitors out there, but maybe he's going to have to be in the purgatory as well if the Montreal Impact cannot find an opportunity to either loan or sell Anthony Jackson.
Can be a 1-2 punch up top for the Ottawa Fury, AGH and Jordan Hamilton, the two sort of enigmas of young Canadian soccer. Look, the one thing I noticed when Montreal listed their training camp roster was that there were only three forwards listed. So AGH has a chance if he can turn things around, and if everyone is ready to just get their put their head down and work, he still has the potential, I would think, to recover from last year. But also, I do think that there comes a time in any relationship, and we've all seen this in our own working relationship. We can go way back to, you know, maybe when we were flipping burgers or whatever. Sometimes you just don't get along with the manager. And it might just not even get along. It might just be like a something. They have, like, you have something in your mind about them. They have something in mind about you and just can never get past it. So it might be better to move him on. But you do have to replace the depth a little bit. And I don't know. You can tell me if you were to look at that roster right now where you'd be worried about, but there isn't a lot of depth up top. If a Rudy was to be hurt, then we're running into the same problems we had last year, right?
And even a Rudy, it wasn't his first place position striker for FC Dallas over the last couple of years. So trying to Montreal clearly got him in an attempt to make him the number nine, not just like literally to make him the striker of the Montreal Impact, and they're going to surround him with talent and the shape of Nacho Piatti on his left. And of course, you'll have a Novillo, which will be the backup of Piatti, on the left side of the attacking midfield. And what's going to happen now? Are there more players going to join the Montreal Impact? There might be some rumors, players coming from Bologna. There's a weird rumor, too. Blair Nzemali is not in the lineup anymore for Bologna, and he's a bit in purgatory in Italy right now. Is he going to come back to Montreal? I really doubt that, because if there's one player in my entire career that I have seen really honest about his time in Major League Soccer and trying to find a way to get out of here quick as possible, it was Blair Nzemali exactly a bit more than a year ago. So we'll see. But Montreal, in my mind, still is one or two attacking player away from having a complete roster. Is that going to be Chris Weehan, who's going to be a trialist at the camp for the Montreal Impact, former Reno FC 1898 player, one of the corniest city in the world, which I have to say, I love Reno, and as well, it may be an option for Montreal. He's a former player for the San Jose Quakes for 11 games, too. So we'll see.
Zavalli, do you really want him back?
I would love to have him back for his play on the field. I would love to have him back because he's amazing to talk to, but I don't think he wants to. And I think the conversation ends there. Like, okay, you don't want to? All right, go on your own way, and best of luck in your future endeavors.
Yeah, he's more likely to end up in Udinese than Montreal, I would have to say, just to pick a completely random Italian team. I always go default to Udinese because I just like saying the word.
trying to spell it now. That's different.
Udinesse.
Not bad, not bad. You got in one S.
Yeah, I think I was a letter off. Anyway, but look, the thing is, too, with the change in the schedule and the condensing of the schedule this year, that it's very imperative, I would suggest, that teams get their ducks in order quicker. In the past, in Major League Soccer, you had a lot more flexibility in terms of kind of starting a season with open spots on the roster and, you know, seeing if one of your kids can grow into a spot.
Like LAFC last year, starting the season with 18 players?
Exactly. Starting the summer, trying to hold off to the summer to bring, you know, because you think you get better options in the summer. But because more teams make the playoffs, so on the surface, if you don't really think about it, you would think, oh, well, that's easier. But it's actually not, because of the format change in the playoffs. It's just more imperative they get higher. It's going to be an incredible advantage for that first place team, not only to get the bye, but they're guaranteed to play at home until the MLS Cup final. And then, you know, if they're the Supporters Shield winner, then they guaranteed all the way. It's the same as now, but there's no road games at all. That's a major advantage for those teams. So it's vital that you get off to a good start. I don't know if you can afford to leave spots open. So I think we're going to see some action. There has already been a lot of signings. That's why we don't go signing by signing in this league, because that would be impossible and kind of boring.
That would be like just you and I mentioning name and teams for about 2 hours a day, and then we have to explain who those players are because we don't know the names.
Yeah, precisely. And yeah, that's not a compelling show. So that's why we're leaving that off. But at the same time, I think you're going to see some action. I think Montreal has to make some moves. But to get back to AGH, I don't know. What do you want from him at this point? Like, because I have a slightly different perspective than maybe you do, in the sense that I'm thinking about his future national team level. Although that said, Canada's depth up front right now is such that I don't know if you need to worry about what AGH is doing. It'd be nice to have him, but it's not like it's 10 years ago when you'd be like praying that he'd find his way.
And you know what? AGH always, just go back quickly on AGH's last press conference in the wrap-up of the season, the day after the elimination when the locker room was emptied by the players. He was talking about how the USL is not something he wants to play at. No one really asked about the Canadian Premier League, but you know what? If there's no suitors found for AGH before long, and then it's April and Canadian Premier League season starts, hey, why not? Why not make history? Canadian player being the first loanee from Major League Soccer team to a Canadian Premier League team. If you need to find someone, for sure there's a Canadian Premier League team who's going to welcome with open arms AGH because of his level of experience in the North American game and his level of goal scoring in USL we've seen in the last, not the last 2 years, but the years before, and just because of his playing style, which would fit a lot with what we expect the CPL to be majoritarily. So who knows? If there's no suitors in France, League 1, League 2, if there's no suitors in England or anywhere else in the world for now, maybe AGH is going to end up in the Canadian Premier League. But it's still all speculation at this point.
Yeah, hopefully so. League 2 would be an interesting thing. I always like the idea of these young guys going over and trying themselves out if they're not completely getting here. I think that there's a certain lack of hunger that sometimes exists within the Canadian players because they've been the big fish in the small pond for a long time, that they're unable to take that step up. So throwing them out of their comfort zone might be ideal for him. And obviously he has the language skills to go into France, so that would be a little bit better for him there. But Kevin, I wanted interesting interviews. You're talking sort of all over the map here today in terms of the preseason open. Obviously that meant that it was media day for MLS.
Yeah.
And we saw that's where the Josie stuff came out of. But the other one that's not getting a lot of attention that I do think is interesting is the Kenna Watson interview. I'm not sure if you heard it. It was on Max and Herc. But
I just heard that he said that in his opinion, the best center back in Major League Soccer is Laurent Simon. You know, I don't want to dismiss what Kendall Watson was saying. But I guess he didn't watch a lot of the Montreal Impact's last game in 2017.
I made this argument when TFC signed him. It's obviously a bit of a risk, but it's a high risk, high reward kind of signing, and it's conducive to the team that's going all in, right? But certainly his numbers were better than people remember them from last year before he moved, and you can certainly look at LAFC's defensively slipped up quite a bit once he left. Now, that probably might have been MAK.
I was going to say, on today is Martin Luther King Day, and our version, our soccer version of it, MAK, was maybe the biggest reason why LAFC had a little dip in their performance right when he got injured, but anyways.
Yeah, anyway, to go back to the Watson article, what's interesting is he once again reiterated, and like quite say it as aggressively as it did back last fall, but they doubled down on the idea that the Robbo out stuff was not really shared in the dressing room, and most of the players felt that the ownership was not fair and how they treated that, which sort of speaks to a cultural issue. So the Whitecaps are coming to they're a crossroads this year. They've gotten away with, in my mind, for a long time, their fan base is sort of, bluntly, they looked at the other Canadian examples and went, well, they're crazier than us, so it can't be too bad. And then all of a sudden, those teams got themselves together, right? And now they're sort of looking like the crazy ones in Canada. So there you go. They've made a great hiring in MDS. And if you haven't listened to his Extra Time Radio interview yet, go do that. We've talked to him on the show before, but it's more of a like, this is who I am and this is why I am. You can understand that from that interview. So go listen to it. And you can be really hopeful for the Whitecaps based on that and based on his success and getting a lot from a little over the approach, close to his career. But when you hear Wasson sort of doubling down on the comments that the culture in that, the communication between front office and football operations is lacking somehow in Vancouver, I don't know how much MDS could change that. He talked a lot in that interview about building culture and how culture was important. He dismissed the exit interviews last year, saying, like, look, I was preparing for a playoff game at LAFC when those things happened, so I can't be held responsible for it. And he's right, but he does have to fix that. And that's going to be a very interesting story going on. And the Whitecaps, I could see the Whitecaps being a playoff team this year. I could also see them being a wooden spoon contending team this year because it's hard to peg them.
It's hard to peg them, yes, but we know MDS. We know what he's good at. And usually it's a mix between tactical genius and management genius. And he's right in the middle of those two. And he's able, with a mix of his tactics and a mix of his man management, to get the best out of players. If he gets the best out of his group of players and the player personnel that he has under him is good enough, the Whitecaps should have a good season. So for me, it's literally not about how he's going to coach, because I figure it's going to be up to par, up to standard, because I've seen MDS coach in a lot of different levels. I've seen him in ASL in Montreal back in the late 2000s. So for me, it's about the recruitment. It's about getting players that have the talent needed but are willing to work as well. If you get those two criteria for your players, and there's a lot of rumors and players being scouted by the Whitecaps all the way up to today, so we'll see if those make the jump to Vancouver. But it's not about, for me, the coaching or the players. I know MDS going to choose players that are helpful for his project. It's just as soon as people just need to buy into MDS, and if they do that, well, you never know what can happen. They could win Major League Soccer in their first year. That's how highly I'm touting MDS. But he needs to have a group of players that are willing to die for him. Does he have that right now? Still to be seen.
I get the question here is whether that kind of culture and that kind of team, you know, that team concept can work at Major League Soccer still. I mean, it certainly could have 10 years ago. I'm not sure whether the league is still at a point where there's enough elite talent in it that having that great sort of we are a team and we will run through a wall for the manager type stuff will work. But we'll see. It's going to be an interesting example. The one place, Kevin, to continue on the media day stuff, Dom Dwyer's three-minute conversation and snippiness makes me suggest that I don't think it's going to be too shocking who my wooden spoon pick is going to be again.
Orlando for the second straight year. I know last year was the Quakes. But, you know, there's more to this story, I believe, that has been lost in, not translation, but it is lost in typing. Who started to ask those questions for that press conference was Pro Soccer USA, which is the national soccer coverage arm of the Orlando Sentinel, which is a popular newspaper from Orlando, a newspaper that Paul Tenorio used to work at, a newspaper that Alicia Delgado, before taking over Pro Soccer USA, was working at and covering Orlando. So it's reporters and an outlet that has a lot of relationship with Orlando players. And there's history and baggage, especially with someone that is hot-headed. I mean hot-headed, not in the fact that he's mean and he's yelling, just that emotions come to the surface quickly in answering questions for Dom Dwyer. So I think it's a mix of all of those things together, and I guess he was annoyed about something maybe even before, and then Pro Soccer USA started asking questions. He's like, you know what, I'm not even going to listen. I'm not even going to nod to those questions, and I'm going to say other questions. And then it started a little confrontation, and the journalists as a whole decided to band together and be like, so Dom, there are a list of questions we're not supposed to ask you? No, you can ask me anything. Doesn't mean he's going to answer. And that was the end of that story. 3 minutes and he's out.
Yeah, at a media event. I'm sure that Dom got taken behind a shed and spoken to by MLS Media Communications there, because it is ultimately a marketing company in a lot of ways, and they wouldn't like to see that kind of thing. But maybe in some level you can see this as a evolution of the league now, that they're not all just walking lockstep together. But it's not a good sign when your players are grumpy on January 20th, though. That's, you know, what I have to say there. And there is a lot of work to be done in Orlando, and a lot of – I don't think you can pick them to be successful until you see them be successful. They are absolutely at a show-me-don't-tell-me stage in their, in that team's development at this point.
Yeah, they're in like, okay, you need to win 10 games in a row before I start believing you. Because last year you started well after six, and you still crapped the bag.
Yeah, no, I remember because all the Orlando fans were tagging me in posts after about the sixth one there, and then they stopped.
And you were like, stopped after that. Just wait, you'll see. And you know, just an example, we have a listener, or maybe former listener. It's hard to tell because he was so annoyed with his team and with the sport of soccer that he stopped watching his own team for months. If you're listening, Garrett in Orlando, we salute you. But there's a lot of Garretts in Orlando. Fans that were just annoyed by their team and just stopped watching after like five losses in a row. Be like, you know what? Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I putting this undue negativity in my life? I'm going to change the channel and follow the University of Central Florida football team, which wins all the time.
Yeah, well, hell, I've experienced that firsthand. I mean, you know, it's a different era, but there comes a point where you evaluate, you know, exactly what you just say. Why am I'm like angry. I'm like, it's affecting my life. And they got to the point at points last year and the points of the last couple of years where Orlando's been doing that. And it started as a shame too. That's why I compare them to Toronto, because it's they feel the same, right? That they started with all this hype and like, oh my God, look at this crowd and they're all exciting and the stadium's nice and all that sort of stuff. And then it just, that hype was never, that sort of potential was never realized, and in fact it was like much worse than that. It was a continuing revolving door, and I don't know, show me don't tell me at this point, but surely to God, they've got to be able to see their ways, the errors of their ways. I mean, stability is so vital in this league, and when you don't have it,
yep,
I guess when you're inside the vortex it is easy to lose sight of that, because you in any single move in an unstable organization can be justified, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to go back to the example I know best, I mean, it's easy to say, yeah, John Carver left, so what were they going to do? It was easy to say that Chris Cummings didn't have enough experience, so they had to move on. It was easy to say, well, Preki was losing the dressing room. It was easy to say, but the problem is that there wasn't one thing. If it was just once, it wouldn't have mattered. But it was 12 things, and the same thing is happening in Orlando. So that's why I put them near the bottom every year. The talent last year in particular should not have put them there, but it's where they ended up. Worst defensive team in the history of the league, statistically speaking.
Yeah, exactly. We're having just a bit of a background noise. We're sorry about that. I think there's renovations in a building not too far from Dwayne. So if you're hearing a little noise when Dwayne speaks, it's normal, but we're going to wrap the show anyways. We wanted to do a Bundesliga talk and talk a bit about the Premier League's weekend. So we might come back tomorrow and talk about the weekend in the Premier League Bundesliga with Davies not making his debut. Neither did Tyler Adams as well. But to finish today's show, Dwayne, we do have one more thing on Media Day that happened in Major League Soccer last week. And for me, that's Bastian Schweinsteiger doubling down and explaining to people, yeah, I'm a great midfielder. I don't mind playing midfielder or attacker. But at this point of my career, I enjoy and I would likely more play as a center back. So, Dwayne, basically, Bastian doesn't want to run anymore.
Yeah, that's he's almost a sweeper at this point. So I won't do another TFC analogy, but there is one out there if you want to think about TFC.
Thorsten Frings. He's the 2019 Thorsten Frings. Fine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there you go. It's Chicago's in the conversation for the previous conversation we just had in terms of
Wooden Spoon 2019 Chicago Fire Crackers.
Remember when they were good for 6 months?
Remember when Dax McCarthy just got there? And then we're like, wow, what a steal by Chicago. They got Dax McCarthy, and now they're looking like a world beater? That lasted about 6 months.
Yeah. Thing about this league, though, is there will always be one team that shocks you in terms of how bad they are, and there will always be one team that shocks you in how good they are. So you never know, Chicago. Maybe you're the shock on the good side this time. I doubt it, but you never know.
I don't think they are, but who knows? You never know. On that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media, @SoccerTodaySPN. Well, that's us, @24th Minute for Dwayne, at Kev Laramie for myself. We'll be back tomorrow and we'll touch on the Bundesliga weekend, the Premier League weekend. We'll touch on news of day one of training camps in Major League Soccer and across the world of football with a soccer perspective tomorrow. And as always, until the next show, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a patron at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 or more a month of pledges will give you access to the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast, which is a Canadian soccer and Canadian soccer only show where Dwayne and I talk about the beautiful game north of the 48. And until next time, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.